Due to a small technical difficulty, the first 4 minutes of the show have not been recorded. If you want to listen to the first 4 minutes of the show, go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Subscribe, and you will get the first 4 minutes of the show. We jump in 4 minutes in. Enjoy the show.
Twitter feed is I took a photo of Carl Robbins. It's hard to see because I'm in the press box and I have an iPhone 5 SE, so you know, my camera is not exactly spectacular.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, that one. He's sitting with his hands in his pocket, just looking like staring out. It reminded me of the of Cummings at the end of that infamous game in New York when the rain was pouring down. He was standing there in his raincoat, and you could see him calculating when flight times back to England were in his mind. And I was half thinking that Carl was just going to get in a cab and go to Pearson after this and fly back to Wales.
That was the topic post-game. Maybe we can touch a bit about that later, but Stephen Caldwell alluded to it in the end of the broadcast, where he wouldn't be surprised if Carl Robinson goes back to Wales after this season. And that he wouldn't be surprised if somebody else is the coach of the Whitecaps next season for sure. Who knows if it happens before?
Yeah, I only because I know how the Whitecaps operate, I would have been shocked had they made a move immediately following the game. But I was thinking to myself and speaking out loud to those around me in the press box last night that if this was a club that had a more traditional league and a more traditional sort of place in the world and they lost to a rival, and TFC is a rival to them, as you know, the scoreline flatters them, honestly, aggregate, as badly as they did with that kind of effort, that in a lot of leagues in the world, you would have seen the coach just walk out the door because they would have known that this, they would have put the pink slip on the, you know, wrote it out for themselves because they know it would have been coming, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the Whitecaps are infuriating, though, because you also see them beat Portland, another rival on the weekend. And certainly the travel would have played a role, but it was that effort. And yes, they play a counter game, but you still have to close down on the ball. TFC, yeah. There was always in the crowd when they were up that goals.
Yeah, and it was 4-0 until Kai Kamara scored their first last night, which really didn't change anything. At that point, you're 4-0 up. It's 6-2 on aggregate. Vancouver needed to score 5 goals to win because of the way goals, but then they would have been actually they would have won if it was tied because of the amount of goals, but they were never looking like they were going to score 4 goals or 5 goals yesterday. It was a defensive, I wouldn't say meltdown, because it wasn't the case. And the game against Portland, we talked about in the weekend, they did play well in a way that they wanted to defend. And the goalkeeper Marinovic said after the game, it's the first game I can remember off the top of my head where players wanted to defend. They were able to defend to save their life and able to stop shots that would go through that I would have to save, and which increases the probability of goals. And it's something we talk often. The more you got shots on net, guess what? There's a higher probability there'll be goals. And against Toronto, it just wasn't the same.
No. Yeah, there wasn't much going on there. I was looking at the stats at halftime, and I know stats don't tell a whole story, but there was just clear indications across the board that the, I'm going to use a hockey term here, the compete level just wasn't there at the same level. They just weren't generating anything. They weren't winning battles. The sort of the one-on-one battles is a stat that comes out, like how many duels is what they call it. TFC had 2-1 in that last night at half. You know, in terms of like passing percentages, TFC was much greater. In terms of tackles, they had much higher percentage. All these sort of effort stats were clearly floating in TFC's manner. And you know, part of that, maybe they're desperate. They are a desperate team. They do desperately want to get back to the CCL, and that was a message that came out a great deal at the end of last night's game when I spoke to the players. And I was at the stadium forever last night. It was a very long post-game procedure. We had an opportunity to talk to pretty much anyone we wanted to, with the exception of the Whitecaps, who kind of got out of there really quick.
You know, those Canadian championship games, it's like a mixed zone, which for some reason you're with the coaches at the press conference, because it's an organized press conference with both coaches and a few players. You come out, you go to mixed zones. Oh yeah, the Whitecaps are all gone. That was the case here, at least.
There was no Alphonso Davies availability last night. He was shepherded out of that building pretty quick.
The famous, you know, put a towel over his head and find a way to get him out of the stadium without people knowing it's him and talking to him. But you mentioned Alphonso Davies. We still see some glimpses of him being great in that game. The track back and the defensive responsibility that he had at one point was impressive to me. Box to box, even 6 yard to 6 yard at some point in that game. He can't do everything by himself. And at the end of the game, you had a good moment where captain of Toronto FC, Michael Bradley, went up to him and said, kid, you're got to go all the way. And you can read the lips. He says, Champions League at one point. He's like, yeah, kid, you're going to represent us really well internationally. Us meaning like Major League Soccer, North American Soccer.
Yeah, well, Michael Bradley, one of his kids, is Canadian. So it's partly us at this point, probably in terms of his mind.
It's too late. We can't do that.
Yeah, we know. We can't cap tie Michael. We might be able to capture the kid, but that'd be a little early. It's the female, though, so it'd benefit the women's team. Davies was a little bit taken out of the game offensively, I thought, but you did see a lot of effort there, and I made a point of watching him play quite a bit until he was pulled early in that second half after TFC got the fourth goal. TFC just did a good job at isolating him. As you say, you can't do everything, and especially when you don't have a lot of movement up front, and Vancouver doesn't. They're so static. They're so static in their lines, and that's a problem, that they really rely on Davies to create stuff out of thin air, and he's not going to be able to do it. He did have that flash on goal that went a little bit wide off of the turnover in the first half. That could have changed the whole tie, head back on in, because Vancouver would have at that point taken a 3-2 lead on aggregate, would have been one goal away from tying the away goals, and TFC suddenly would have felt the pressure. But then Josie got the goal, and away they went. And literally after Josie scored that goal, there was really no doubt in that stadium. It's like, okay, well, I guess we're going to have to buy a parka for February again because the CCL is coming back.
And like two goals just before halftime and two goals just after halftime. You change channel for a second to see what's the weather going to be like tomorrow. Then you come back at the 53rd minute. What? They scored two more goals? I missed them. Yeah, that was my story.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's... I thought, though, the most telling thing was actually after Vancouver sort of almost by mistake got kind of back in the tie. I mean, kind of. I use the term loosely with the second goal, which, again, came completely off against the run and was a freak goal, really, that went through, like, six different legs. Once that happened, it was like TFC scored 3 minutes later. And to me, that said all you needed to do is that once TFC was, they were trying to play contain at that point, and then once they got the goal back and they went, okay, well, if Vancouver gets another one, this could get dicey. Because Vancouver wins if they tie it at four, obviously. They just immediately scored again. And to me, that spoke to that lack of compete again. And, you know, and there's a lot of factors in that. And I don't want to ascribe motivation because I can't. Like,
no,
I can't unless you can read a mind. But in terms of what I saw out there, they were definitely a tired team, if not an unmotivated team.
This is going to seem a bit out of context, but yesterday, Jonathan Tannenwald wrote an article talking about Jim Curtin and how Jim Curtin will be the first, who he's the head coach of Philadelphia Union, if you don't know, who's maybe not the most tactical coach. He's not the best tactician, but he's a good man management. When you look at Kyle Robinson, I can maybe say the same little aspect. He's not the best tactician to adjust during a game, during a season, adjust a few tendencies to his players and try to recognize a pattern that they get beat on. But he was okay, a bit more than okay, in men management over the years. And it's worse and worse when it comes to the performance of the team. If you look since Kyle Robinson joined them, someone made an allusion to like Dexter, the series, where first season, great. Second season, it's all right. Third season's terrible. Fourth season, it's a bit better than the third. And then the fifth season, it jumped a shark. And for me, that's a bit of the same relation to Kyle Robinson and his coaching with Vancouver. Look at his overall record, 76, 76, and 52. Is that good enough? Is it good enough? Is it all on Robinson? Is it the players? Robinson has his say on the players, but then you have Jeff Mallett, owner of Vancouver, saying, oh, money doesn't really make you win, saying like using Toronto this year as an example, forgetting that Toronto won the MLS Cup last year, forgetting that Toronto made it to the final in 2016, forgetting that Toronto made it to the CONCACAF Champions League final, forgetting that they won three Canadian championships in a row. Money does help you, and I do have a feeling for Vancouver. It's not just Robinson. It could be part of maybe the whole solution to make this team better, but they do have to go a little bit deeper in their pocket, or if not deeper, to spend a bit more wisely.
Yeah, that's awful cynical of Mallett to say that. He's appealing to his base, and his base in terms of that, you know, that cynical way where you're trying to like touch on that kind of jealousy or resentment that Vancouver sports fans sometimes have to bigger markets. And I'm not just including Toronto in that. They'd also have this to Seattle. So, they just outspent us. We're more clever. If it wasn't for the money, we'd win. And then they try and like spin it in different ways that, oh, we can outsmart them. We can do better down there. Well, it's awful convenient to ignore the CCL final. It's awful convenient to ignore that less than a year ago they were holding MLS Cup up in the same stadium they were standing there. And it's awful convenient to avoid the factors that are outside of Toronto FC's control that have led to the struggles in league play this year.
Yeah.
And you restrict it to league play. They almost won the CCL. They were a penalty kick away. And they won the Voyageurs Cup.
They eliminated Tigres and Club America. They just couldn't eliminate Chivas. But you still eliminated maybe two of the best Mexican team ever in the same tournament. And when I say ever, I mean like right now. Those two teams were above and beyond a lot of other Mexican teams we've seen in the CONCACAF Champions League over the last few years. Chivas was motivated on that day. They were set up properly. And the manager of Chivas did an amazing job to contain Toronto in those two games. But when you look at even Portland when they won the league 3 years ago now, it's not with spending a lot of money. Red Bulls winning, yeah, Red Bulls do spend, quote-unquote, a lot, but not on every superstar. You have one or two superstar, but it's more about the team concept. So the comments of Jeff Mallett, I'm sorry, sir, they're not really true. It's not reality, and spending does go a long way. Like everything in life, if you want something quality, you got to fork out the money.
Yeah, you don't have to spend millions, billions. You can spend smartly for sure, but you do have to spend a little. And when I say that he's appealing to his base is shrinking when it comes to the people that are going to be receptive to the lesson.
Yeah, it's a dwindling base, I was going to say.
Yeah, I was reading Vancouver Twitter because the game was, bluntly, the game was dull after TFC got up. So I was, distracted by Twitter and lots of things in the press box. The nachos were good too, but... Yeah. Anyway, and they're no longer buying the line. At least the engaged fans are no longer buying the line that Vancouver somehow is more ethical or something in their lack of spending. They're like, you need to invest if you're going to have this team. They pay pretty high season ticket prices out there.
Everything is more expensive in Vancouver, but.
And as much as people like to bash on MLSC, particularly on the West Coast, I do believe that the Whitecaps season ticket price is actually higher across the board. So they're making a lot of money and not investing it back in the club. They just sold Davies, and are they going to invest it? Like, they started a kind of a quasi program to bridge gap between their academy and the first team, but they're not going to reinvest in the USL.
They got rid of WFC2 at the end of last season. They pulled a FC Montreal move like FC Montreal did 2 years ago. It's like, oh yeah, we don't see the benefit as much as we would like to, and we're not necessarily using patience in this equation, so let's cut our losses right away and get rid of the franchise.
Yeah, and I think that particularly in the Whitecaps, I always find it egregious in the Whitecaps' particular case because for years and years and years, they have really pushed the fact that that's what differentiates them, that they are the academy. They had the residency there early on, and they did, and the good credit to them for having that foresight back in the day, but what have they done with it? What they do with it is they go out and have these sort of satellites, and the cynical view of the satellites is that they're there as marketing extensions. And right now, they have pulled the kid, his name's escaped me right now, from Winnipeg that they pulled. They have found some players doing that, but by and large.
And then they haven't given them a chance, like Marco Bustos, who is officially not even part of USL of Vancouver anymore. He was last year. He was re-signed. He got sent on loan in Liga MX. And then now he's going for a USL team full time. He's not even part of WFC2, Vancouver. He was WFC2 back then. But that's just another example of someone from the residency program, from the academy, that does not have a chance. If you're not named Alfonso Davies, even Russell Tybert has to fight hard to get playing time, even though he's the one player with the most amount of Canadian Championship caps, with over 22 with last night. If you're not Alfonso Davies, guess what? There hasn't been that many players coming through the top of that pipeline.
And not to belabor this, but Russell Tybert, they kind of got on a technicality because they had been named an MLS franchise, but they hadn't officially became one yet. So they managed to claim him and sign him just before TFC's exclusive area would have prevented him from doing so. I don't agree in the exclusive area, so I don't have a problem with it. But that's kind of a funny story too when you think about in terms of playing time, he has the most, and he really wouldn't have been there otherwise. But, you know, I just ultimately don't think they've done enough with that academy to promote it the way that they do. And that's, they're not alone in that. There's a lot of teams in MLS, even Dallas, for as much as we talk about how great they are with the academy, they sign a lot of players, but, you know, Acosta, I guess, but not a ton of them have really starred. It's kind of been a struggle for a lot of, you know, we talked with this a few months ago, or earlier this month, about the lack of playing time for young players that happens within Major League Soccer. That is a gap that they're going to need to figure out. I don't know what the answer is, whether you have an under 23 quota or something like that. I would like that, but I know that a lot of other people might push back against it. So a lot of questions there.
On the next Two Solitude Soccer podcast for Patrons Only, we'll talk about more in depth about the Canadian Premier League joining the Canadian Championship. President of the Canadian Soccer Association, Stephen Reid, at halftime did announce that the Canadian Premier League will be joining the Canadian Championship next year. We don't necessarily know the format yet, but we know it's going to expand, and we're going to maybe expand our ideologies versus this tournament in the next edition of the Two Solid Dudes Soccer Podcast for Patrons Only. If you want to make sure you don't miss it, go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to this exclusive show. Dwayne, there was a few games this week in Major League Soccer before we move to the UEFA Super Cup quickly. DC Portland last night. DC United, 6 points so far this week. They're going for 9. They're going for another win on Sunday. 4, Portland 1. That Rooney free kick goal. Rooney got 2 goals last night. Devin Maddox got a goal against his former team. That really made him really happy, if you look at the celebration. DC's rolling. DC's now 8th in the standings and continuing to look ahead with 24 points. Chicago, Orlando, and Toronto, 23 points tied in the bottom of the East. Then you got DC at 24 and the rest. DC could make a push with the for the playoffs with their games that they do still have in hands. They have 13 games left this season now. It was 14 before yesterday. And DC's looking good now. They beat a good team in Portland last night. Well, a good team in Portland, in DC. They were playing in DC. The good team was Portland.
There you go. No, I mean, I it's ironic that I, the, you know, notorious, infamous Manchester City fan, is the guy that has continued to defend Wayne Rooney in MLS since he came over. I think when you look at a lot of the daily, a lot of the podcasts out there, a lot of the commentary out there, sort of push back against him. What have I been saying since the first time? Is it, fitness is going to be the question, but the skill is there, and we're seeing that, and we're seeing the difference he's making for this club. And you know, are they? A lot of us here in Toronto would like to think that TFC is the team that's below that red line that can squeeze up. But increasingly, with all those home games and all the games in hand, it's hard to ignore DC United, who now, as you say, has jumped out of the basement for the first time all year, and that's 7 points per game as well as on pure points. They're 1.14, so there's still room there. No offense, Montreal fans. I don't really trust that club to continue on the hot streak that they had last month. The minus 10 goal diff kind of jumps out at me there. Philly is Philly. Who knows? They're kind of floundering around. I think they're going to finish around 6th, but they might be 7th. They might be 5th. DC's on fire and only 6 points back at this point. That's not insurmountable. Any of the teams below that red line now, you know, 7 points from last to the playoff line, and really, you know, any of them could jump back in there. I don't really trust the Fire, but you never know in Orlando.
No one does.
I'm belabored to death. But
no one TFC's does got Chicago. Like, Chicago, it hasn't panned out this year. And it's not just Bastion's fault. Whatever happened to Nikolic? Yeah? Whatever happened to him? He used to be a hot striker.
We've talked about TFC to death, too, so I'm not going to belabor this right now. Obviously, we just talked about them now, but in terms of their MLS, I'll say this with definitively. I think that their playoff possibilities will be decided this weekend. They absolutely need to beat the Earthquakes. If they don't, I think it's done. You can pack it up and start to focus on the CCL. And Vanny, you know, he's not going to give up in the season. They talk about how every game was vital. But I think that they also talked about how much they have debriefed. He said that they have constantly debriefed the CCL run last year, both in terms of what happened in terms of the play in the competition, but how to prepare for it next year so that it doesn't have the same impact on their season. That's something that's internally been talked about a lot. And you know, I think if they don't get the full 3 points this weekend, that they might be talking a lot more about it, because at that point, although they won't say it publicly,
yeah,
if you don't get 3 points against the worst team in the league, you pack it in, it's done.
You don't deserve to make the playoff if you can't beat San Jose, literally. And it depends, too, because this weekend there's a very high probability either Philly or Montreal wins a game. Montreal's playing Chicago Saturday. If one of those two teams win the game, they go to 33 points. And then the gap becomes 10 if Toronto doesn't win. And 10 in nine games, it's a lot of points. Or DC continues to win. DC's up on 27 and still games in hand. And then you go to 30 really easily. Yeah, it could be a danger. But even DC, as much as we're talking about games in hand, then they're still in a precarious position. It still almost needs a win-out situation. But the way they're playing, we can see it happen. Let's continue with the results from last night quickly. LAFC 2, RSL 0. LAFC, out of their semi-slump, got a good result at home at Bank of California versus a direct rival for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. And Tuesday night, LA Galaxy in Colorado, 2-2 Colorado with the tying goal late in the game. Sebastian Liggett from LA got a go-ahead goal, but then Colorado had some other plans. If you can't beat Colorado, do you really deserve a playoff spot? And we'll see. The Galaxy are not necessarily firing on all cylinders outside of Zlatan. And Zlatan mentioned after the game, yeah, I'm not convinced about this result. And we needed the win. We didn't get it. So I don't know where it leads us, but it does put us in a precarious position too.
Yeah. Well, LFC, they're 2 points back at LAFC right now. The West is still pretty wide open, though, across the board, right down to Seattle. And Seattle's the team that you kind of go, oh, God, here they go again, right? So that's what my focus is going to be on in the West for the rest of the way, is whether the Sounders can roll back in and maybe make another MLS Cup final. It seems to be their trend. We always joke about the TFC Seattle three-peat if they're both at sixth, which would be, you know, hilarious, but unlikely at this point, to be honest.
It would be hilarious, but unlikely. But it could happen. Yes. To finish the show, Dwayne, the UEFA Super Cup was done yesterday, and I predicted it. I knew Madrid would win. I just didn't know which side of Madrid would win. Turns out that it's the underdogs who won. 4 for Atleti, 2 for Real Madrid. No Cristiano, no party, I guess.
Well, this is the conversation, the narrative amongst most of the international media right now, is that the fact that they, not only that they don't have Ronaldo, but they haven't spent the money. They haven't added any names to replace him at this point. Now, this is still the star-studded team, you know, a team that has the core of what won the Champions League the last 3 years in a row. But that core included Cristiano Ronaldo, who is obviously, I think, the best player in the world right now. I am willing to no longer go 1A, 1B. I think it is 1-2, and one is Ronaldo.
I agree.
But I think that... Look, first off, it was a great game, and don't tell me that neither one of those teams wanted to win that. And part of that was the rivalry. You know, Atleti in particular likes to always beat Real Madrid, although Madrid was not happy when Atleti scored the goal in extra time there to go 3-2 up, especially since they were leading in the 78th minute and ended up having Atleti come back to win that game 4-2 ultimately in extra time. They were certainly not happy. The emotion was clearly on display. This was not a trophy that was being – this was not the community charity. I always forget which one it is, Shield. This was something a little more intense than that, for sure.
Well, because it's a European Super Cup, so it's a gala game, exhibition game, but from the winner of the Champions League versus the winner of the Europa League. When you win Europa League, you kind of have something to prove, saying, yeah, we won the second-tier European competition, but we're as good as you, if not better, and we're going to prove it today on this pitch. And if you're Antoine Griezmann, he's having quite the last few weeks, few months. You won Europa League, then the World Cup, and then the UEFA Super Cup. Trophies galore the last 3 months for the Grizz.
Yeah, I don't, for sure. Griezmann's having, and Griezmann cost it was a hell of a, this is why I think Atleti has a chance this year. They need to be near perfect, but they are a very strong team and a team that has a lot of continuity, and that matters a great deal too. I you know, as much as we talk about Griezmann and Costa's first goal was absolutely out of this world, pure muscular. The way that he headed the ball over to himself and powered it through from like a crazy angle to take the lead just a minute into the game. I mean, that's cost in a nutshell, just how muscular a player he is. And muscular is how you know, if you're branding Atletico Madrid, you have to get one word to brand them. I'm talking about branding again here. Muscular would be the word you'd use, and Costa is the epitome of that, and Simeone ultimately is the ultimate epitome of it, right? Yeah. So that was a great way to put it. But this is a final thought, and I don't want to overanalyze what is a Gallo ultimately. But you look at Koke, you look at Coutinho, both guys have been core to this forever. Koke had the goal to make it 4-2. Those kind of players aren't talked about as much with Atletico Madrid, but they are absolutely vital to what they do defensively, and they can also chip in, particularly. Okay.
We are having trouble hearing Dwayne. Dwayne's connection has been going on and off over the last few seconds. We apologize for that. I guess that's a sign that we should wrap things up for today. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, the show at Soccer Today SPN, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. If you like what we do on a daily basis, please consider supporting us. And if you support us to the level of $2 a month, you get access to the exclusive To a Solitude Soccer podcast for patrons only, where you are invited to listen to Canadian soccer talk, Canadian soccer, and Canadian soccer only with the Canadian Premier League and other Canadian soccer topics. We'll be back tomorrow with more Soccer Today talk. And until then, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.